Just underneath the surface of most people is a little thing called fear, and it's everywhere. In many ways, it's becoming the new normal. You see it in the live comments as Dr. Morrison gives her daily updates, especially as ease-back conversations become very, very real and very, very close to our province. You see it in the daily Facebook posts of people who are all in on the latest conspiracy theories, and what's driving this and what's shaping them is driven by nothing more than fear. You see it as you continue to go into stores. While we wait to go into Sobeys or Walmart, people's eyes are still down, very little conversation, very little laughter, very little engagement with people that we don't know or even people that we do know. When this is all over, I joke with my friends and family that I'm going to run through Walmart, give everybody a giant hug, and might even lick their face just to lance this boil that we can be together again, but I know that there's going to be serious ramifications if I do something like that. If you watch the news at all, fear is everywhere. It's in the headlines each and every day. It's in the rising death toll. It's in the interviews that they choose to show on TV. You see it in parents' eyes, fearful that they might be their child's teacher for the rest of their life. Now, I know that some of us pretend like we aren't fearful of COVID-19 and all the connected ramifications that it's bringing. But the data suggests otherwise. In fact, the data suggests that lots of people are lying. In a new poll conducted by Legere and the Association for Canadian Studies, they have found that 64% of Canadians are afraid of contracting the virus. This rises to 76% when we think of our loved ones getting the virus. Another writer for the BBC, David Robson, wrote an article where he suggests that one's fear of the virus is actually changing our psychology. He writes, "The constant feeling of threat may have other more insidious effects on our psychology. As examples of this more insidious effect, he references the sharp rise in xenophobia and racism in Europe and in North America. These are sad and disturbing realities, but it shouldn't surprise us at all, because fear, when left unchecked, works inside the human heart in such a way that it turns us into incredibly difficult people to be around. It can turn us into angry, controlling people. It can rule and shape our life in that it will determine what we will and won't do. It can fill a person up with hate towards anything or anyone that's different from us in any way." And given how fear is on the rise due to COVID-19, here is my question for you and I to work through this morning. Can fear lead us to faith? Can fear, something that is awful, something that is harmful, something that the evil one uses all the time to bring harm to the human condition, can this thing of fear actually lead us into glorious spaces of faith? To help us answer this question, there are two stories I would direct your attention to. The first one is the story of Rahab. You can read about her in Joshua chapter 2, and it continues on down to Joshua chapter 6. She is a prostitute in the great city of Jericho. If you know the story at all, she's the one who hides spies in her home. And make no mistake, it is fear that compels her to hide the spies in her home. She says to the spies in Joshua 2:9, "I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us. So all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you." And she goes on to tell the spies all that she knows. She knows that the God of the Hebrews, the living God, has brought them out of Egypt. She knows that God has caused the sea to dry up to allow them to pass through it. She knows that the God of the Hebrews has fed them as a nation for 40 years in the wilderness. She knows that this group of peasants and slaves have defeated significant military forces while on their way to Jericho. And it's out of fear for her life, for the lives of her family, where she invites these spies into her home in an effort to spare her and her loved ones. Just look at this passage, Joshua 2, 12 and 13. "Swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family. Give me a sure sign that we will spare the lives of my father, my mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, that you will save us from death." Story two is connected to the Exodus story. And I know that the main characters in this story are God, Pharaoh, and the Israelite people. But I also know that there are other players in the story that we often don't spend a lot of time talking about. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 38, Moses, the author of Exodus, writes, "Many other people went up with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds." One of my favorite theologians describes the many other people as a mixed group of individuals, comprised of Egyptians, other people groups that were present in Egypt alongside Israel while they were slaves. And this group of people, the many other people, they are a witness to God going to work in the land of Egypt through the plagues. They have a front row seat for between 6 and 10 months is what most theologians would suggest the period of the plagues are. This is the most significant human event of God activity in the world, and they are watching it all unfold. And everyone begins to see that the God of the Hebrews is the one true and living God. The gods of Egypt can't stop the flies. They can't stop the darkness. They can't stop the locusts. They can't stop the boils, the hail, and all the things that come their way. And these are the very things that the gods of Egypt are supposed to have control and power and authority over. In this moment in time, Yahweh is having his way with them. And now, these many other people get wind of the 10th and final plague that's coming. That around midnight, an angel of death will enter the land and firstborn male child will die. Unless you find a lamb, you take its blood, you put it on the door mantle and doorposts. Although the text doesn't explicitly lay it out like we see in the story of Rahab, I also know that I am a father and that I am a human being. And if I have been a witness of all this unfolding for the last 6 to 10 months, all these plagues, all these things that the God of Egypt cannot stop or prevent from happening, I am aware that there is something greater at work in the world and I am terrified. And as a father who has a firstborn male child, I, out of fear, do whatever is needed to save his life. I find a lamb. In fact, I might even steal your lamb. And I take its blood and I put it on the top of the door and the post and I wait. Fear, in many ways, is the new normal. It's shaping so many aspects of our lives. I want to ask you a really personal question. And if you don't know who Jesus is, this is especially for you. What are you doing with your fear? Is it causing you to tighten up? Do you find yourself getting angry over nothing? Are you becoming controlling in whatever you have left to control in your life because you've lost control in the larger spaces? Are you cutting off and ruining relationships? Are you worried? Are you filled with anxiety about things of tomorrow that you don't know the answers to? Or is the fear you're experiencing creating a curiosity in you? Are you actively looking for help? Are you trying to solve this problem of fear in your life? Because in a very real way, your fear can be the motivating factor in how you start your journey of faith with the living God. We know this is true because of the stories that I've mentioned a moment ago, the stories of Rahab and the story of the many other people. It was their fear that served as the catalyst that caused them to seek and act in faith. And this still happens today. Christianity Today, in an article, which is a really original title, reads, "Corona searches lead millions to hear about Jesus." Their data shows that tens of thousands of people have started a life-giving relationship of faith with Jesus Christ, born out of fear they have connected to this virus. There is a story of a woman named Grace. She finds herself on a website dealing with coronavirus fears. In the live chat box on this website, she begins a dialogue with the person on the other side who just happens to be a Christ follower. They recognize what Grace is really after, and there, through a live chat box, Grace begins her journey of faith. In this same article, Michelle Dietrich, Global Media's outreach director, she writes, "We are seeing millions of people open to talking about faith in the face of fear." She says the conversations they're having normally starts with something to the effect of, "I'm not really a religious person, but I don't know who else to turn to other than God." So again, let me ask you, what are you doing with your fear? Is it moving you to spaces to seek help? Because if this is you, you're not alone. There are millions of people around our country and the world that are doing the same thing right now. And it's no different than the fear that began in Rahab and the many other people. And if you go back into these stories, we see that fear is the catalyst to faith. Rahab, out of fear, begins her journey of faith. The many other people in Egypt, out of fear, begin their journey of faith. In a few moments, we will come around the Lord's table together. But before we do, there is one more thing I want to highlight about Rahab and the many other people. It is true, out of fear, they acted in faith. And after this moment, they continued on. Rahab and her family found themselves living in the middle of this community of faith. In Joshua 6, it says, she lives among the Israelites to this day. The many other people found themselves living in the middle of the community of faith. In Exodus 12, 48, it says, a foreigner that's residing among you who wants to celebrate the Lord's Passover must. And there's clear instruction now that you're a part of this group of people. This is the way we live together for the glory of God. And here's the point. They both started from a place of fear. They moved into a place of faith. And from there, they were formed for the glory of God. Think of it this way. Fear, what begins here, was a catalyst to faith, where they were formed as part of God's people in and through and by His people for the glory of God. So to the question, can fear, something that is awful, something that is harmful, something that the evil one uses to bring harm to the human condition, can this thing of fear lead us into faith? Well, the answer is yes, it can. And it's not because we're clever. It's not because we've outsmarted fear itself. It can simply because God is good. And if we seek Him, He will find us. Fear can lead us to faith because God is good. He is merciful and gracious, abounding in love and faithfulness. He is the good shepherd, the one who goes looking for His sheep, the one who leaves the 99 to find the one who is captivated by fear, to rescue, to save this one. He is the one who, in our time of need, we can turn to and get the help that we need. And listen, God is so good that regardless of where we are at, He can meet us there. If you're intellect, He can meet you right there, as He did with Nicodemus. If you're filled with guilt and shame, He can meet you there, as He did with the woman at the well, Zacchaeus, Mary Magdalene, and the list goes on. If you're filled with doubt and suspicion, He can meet you there, as He did with Gideon and Thomas, and again, a list of others. If you've looked at every other option known to you, and all of those options have failed, He can meet you there, as He did with the Roman centurion who went looking for help to find healing for his daughter who was sick. If you're filled with unbelief, He can even meet you there, as He did with the father in Mark 9, who asked, help me in my unbelief. If you're filled with pride and arrogance, He can meet you there, because that's where He met me. It's my prayer for you today that you in your fear would turn to the one who can offer real help. Turn to the one and cast all your cares on Him, that you in your fear would come to a place where you would be free of it and walk in this incredible reality where He is with you. This morning, we have a good Father. He can meet you in your fear, where your fear gives way to faith, where you would be formed for His glory. Thank you for being with us this morning. God bless.